This is a continuation of the class we had 2 weeks ago, but I went ahead and put most of the material in there again so we could review. And Jeff called me. He said, what am I supposed to do with these prophets? Are we starting a new class? I said, no, I should have put these in back before we started the Bible characters and started the major and the minor prophets. So these two classes will probably go back into that Old Testament Bible history, maybe number 3. So we'll put them in there. But I've been very intrigued. Whoops. Yeah, I got it. Kelly and I were talking about this the other night, and it's just so intriguing to see how God is working with nations and individuals in tandem. And so we want to kind of develop, first of all, the concept of the nations. Then we're going to go back and look at the messianic prophecies, because those are two of the main purposes that we use the Old Testament for today, is to kind of comprehend a lot of these things. So, well, I guess that's not the main purpose. We are also looking at the Old Testament Bible characters that we might have hope. In Acts chapter 17, what did we learn about nations? There at the top of the page?
They're pre-appointed.
Okay, pre-appointed for what? Two
when
things.
They start.
When they start, when they end, and? How big they get. So God already knows, and we'll see toward the end of the class that he was even able to say in Isaiah who the king was going to be in 150 years, and he was able to know beforehand that the Medo-Persian Empire was going to begin and the Babylonian Empire was going to end. And the very night that he's drinking out of those gold vessels, who's waiting outside? The Medo-Persians are waiting outside to destroy the Babylon, and that very night he lost his kingdom. So God's really working, and Peter mentions this also in Acts a couple of times, where he says that God put the people in the position, and what did they do? Whatsoever your hand purposed for them to do. They played, you know, God is so smart that even the wicked people that are trying to fight against him, what do they end up doing?
Exactly what he wanted.
How'd Pharaoh do? Pharaoh was fighting every step of the way, and what was he doing?
Exactly
what God wanted him to do. You just can't win. I mean, you can't win trying to fight against God. And so you might as well just submit, because that's the only way we can win. Okay, so God has chosen these nations. And then we learn in Romans that how extensive is this? I'm jumping ahead of myself here. There's two purposes for nations and individuals. The first one we see is in 1 Timothy chapter 2, because not only are we talking about God wanting all men to be saved and come to the knowledge of the truth based on our preaching, but who are we to pray for in verse 2? Kings and all are in authority. Why? So we can be able to do our work, so that we can do what we're supposed to be doing. That's what nations are designed and planned to accomplish. And as long as we are gaining souls out of a nation, what's God going to be able to see?
Progress.
Is it worth continuing the nation? When Abraham pleaded with God about Sodom and Gomorrah, what was he hoping to find?
Faithful people.
Just some faithful people. Because faithful people will create what?
More faithful people.
But if you don't have anybody, then it's time for that nation to be replaced with one that will be more productive to God. The second one is, we don't always understand why God lets things go the way they go, but in verse 9, what do we read there in 2 Peter 3? Why does God do what he does? Okay, he doesn't want anyone to perish. He wants all to come to repentance. And so when I'm begging and pleading, remember Habakkuk? Lord, you need to do something, and you need to do it right now. And what's God say? I'm doing it. I'm raising up the Chaldeans. I'm raising up the Babylonian Empire. What does Habakkuk say?
It's
not quite what I have in mind. I just wanted you to punish us a little bit. I didn't want you to destroy us. But God's ways are not man's ways. And sometimes, you know, my boss used to tell me, be careful what you wish for, because you might not get exactly what you were thinking you were getting when you were hoping or praying that it might come to pass. And that's why it's wonderful that God overrules. Sometimes we ask God for things, it's the very last thing we need. Go ahead, Kelly.
Yes, I think if we remember the mercy that's shown to us when we came to the truth, for we were, Titus chapter 3, for we were all once ignorant, disobedient, hateful and hating one another. What if God destroyed everything while we were in
that? That's my sermon right there. I talk about that a lot. You know, all those people were probably praying, Lord, do something about Paul or Saul of Tarsus. What were they hoping for?
Get rid of him.
Yeah, this guy needs to die. Well, what's God thinking he's going
to
do?
He needs to be saved.
I have plans for him.
He's going to save him, and he's going. When did God choose him? From his mother's womb. So once again, God is working out his plans. And yet at the same time, Calvin got it so wrong. Does he have to, he's so intelligent, does he have to interfere with our free will to get what he wants? No. He finds the people who will do exactly, remember what he told Pharaoh, for this very reason,
I raised you up.
Because sometimes you need that junkyard dog. I mean, junkyard dog in a home, you want him there? No. But what about at the junkyard? So Pharaoh had no place anywhere except as the leader of the nation that God was about to destroy. And I think the same thing was probably true of those Jewish leaders at the time of Christ. There really was no place for people like that except to fulfill God's desires that the salvation of all men be brought into place by someone doing such terrible things to his son. And should have known better. Rob?
To make application today, we better make sure that we're being used by God for good and not evil. We often think of other people, but we have to think of our own motives. We have to think of our own lifestyle, what we say, what we do. Because the devil will use Christians, people that appear to be doing right, to do things wrong. I mean, it's just...
Well, that's what Paul said in Romans 9, right? Vessels of wrath, vessels of mercy. Judas may have thought, wow, I'm going to be an apostle. This is wonderful. I'm going to be able to do so many wonderful things. But what was his character? He just didn't take care of his character. What was he finally used for? Something that none of us would want to be. But that's how it goes. If you don't properly prepare your heart, or allow yourself to get into a position. You know, some people, I've made this point for years, there'd be people who might have been saved, but they pushed into an eldership that they weren't qualified for, and they did things they shouldn't have done, and they could lose their soul. Those qualifications are in there just as much to protect the man as they are to protect the church. So, so I'm not going to spend much time on the potter because we talked about him last week, but what does a potter teach? If God says, I'm going to build up a nation and they do what is wicked, then he repents. You're right, Cameron. You're just one step behind me here. So then we got another nation and they're doing what is wicked, and God makes a decision to send somebody like Jonah, and he's the decree's already. I mean, when Jonah said 40 days and Nineveh is going to be overthrown, was God just playing there? No, that was a decree. And what did Nineveh have the opportunity to do? Change God's mind, which is a wonderful opportunity. Now you say, well, but he already knew they were going to do that. Well, let's not get too far ahead of ourselves, because God doesn't mess with man's free will, and there may be times where it's right on the line and God doesn't know which way they're going to go. Kelly?
Because that's a whole topic for a different class.
Yes.
I think some people think that there's a problem if we say, well, God knows, therefore God interferes. Those two things are not equal to one another.
Right.
God can know something without interfering with somebody's free will.
That's right.
They could, Pharaoh could still have changed.
That was God's hope. I'm sure that was God's hope.
God knew, God used his knowledge about what Pharaoh's character was to accomplish his will.
Right.
It doesn't mean he made him do something.
Yeah.
That's the difference, I think, that sometimes we struggle with.
Sure, and Nebuchadnezzar is just the opposite, right? I mean, Nebuchadnezzar was changed into an animal. Could he have come out of that being more angry and more bitter and more irritated? No, but he came out of it wanting to do God's will. But what I find fascinating about this verse is God is actually saying, here's what I'm going to do, but then they change, so I'm not going to do that anymore, which leads to what? Is there times where God's going to change his mind? So what does that mean? You know, like I say, it's so complicated. That's why people like Calvin and people like Luther, they're just so smart, they can sit down and write it all out and figure it all out. And yet, who has known the mind of the Lord, is what Paul says. you try to get back and say, well, here's what God had in mind when he was doing that. How can we even begin to comprehend what he had in mind? Ray?
Yeah, God wants genuine believers. You know, what robots we always talk about, we're not programmed. I look at my cat, I think my cat is programmed because all cats do the same thing. We're not animals, we're human beings, and we have free will for a reason, because we have an intellect. We can speak the language that we do, and we can reason whether we're doing evil or not. We can decide whether we really believe it.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
He wants us to really, it isn't just what they believe.
Sure.
He wants the real thing.
That's what Paul teaches in Galatians 6, right? God is not mocked. What you sow is what you're going to reap. And so at the end of your life, when you say, God, why did I end up like this? Why wasn't the gospel strong enough? What's God going to be able to say?
Choices.
Yeah, you made some very terrible choices in your youth, and now you're reaping that. Ken?
It's kind of irrelevant now, but it seems to me that God, we qualify for one of God's, you know, ways of dealing with us. And you know, if we change our thing, then we're on the other side of the way he deals with people.
Right. Yeah. That's what Paul said in 2 Corinthians 5, right? We're all going to receive at the judgment seat of Christ. What are we going to receive? What was done in the body. Our choices. We're going to be able to blame God for anything. Every mouth's going to be stopped. Kelly?
Yeah, I was just going to... This passage of Jeremiah is a really important one, because it helps us to really intellectually grasp what God meant about the potter and clay, especially when he goes back and talks about that in Romans chapter 9.
Right.
He's not saying that he shapes their will. He's actually saying that their evil or good can change how he's going
yeah.
to react
right.
to the situation. So that's really the clarification about how God operates.
Right.
You know?
And it shows his justice and his mercy.
That's right.
What you see in Calvinism, you see any mercy at all in Calvinism. God just picked who's going to be saved and who's going to be lost in eternity. And you don't have any choice. Even if you want to be saved. Man, that's a pretty rough deal. For you know, I don't think too many people believe it anymore from what I've been reading. Maybe you're diehard Calvinists, but not too many, which is good. Okay, so then we come to Noah and the ancient world. Again, we covered this last time, so I just want to hit on it briefly. But this is the first time that God deals with a collective instead of an individual. Now, he deals with it from an individual and a collective basis. I think, and I'm sure you do too, that if Noah had gone out to preach and everybody had repented, what would have happened to the ark?
Wouldn't have been necessary.
It could have just stayed there. It didn't have to be there. But if they didn't repent, but a few individuals repented, now what's the ark for? See, now we have an escape mechanism either way. But nothing's fixed with God if the people will repent. Although, whenever imagination and thoughts of men's heart, as you see at the bottom here, now, this is what God was dealing with. The wickedness was great. Every intent, and that word more literally, I think, is imagination. Every imagination of the thoughts of his heart, only evil continually. Is that pretty bad? Now, we live in a wicked nation, but I don't know that anybody's imaginations are only evil continually. Most people seem to have at least one or two good thoughts. What about these people? They didn't have any. I mean, that would have been... Can you imagine? And it's most of the people. Can you imagine meeting strangers and knowing what's in their heart? And it's filled with violence. It just must have been a terrible time to live. Tell Jenny now.
Yeah, I was just going to point that out. I said exactly what you are. I mean, we bemoan the violence in our nation, and we should. That the murder of unborn children is certainly a horrific thing.
Right.
But it wasn't anywhere near as bad as that was.
Right.
I think you may heard.
No, that's right. And one other thing, you know, people who say today, you know, it's not a bad movie, it's R for violence. Well, what does this verse say about violence? God like violence? Should we go get into, oh, I know it's not real. Well, I know, but what is it doing to you? And it's just, this is something to think about anyway. Ray?
Noah was the only one, who knows how many people were back then, but Noah was the only one out of all those people that had that motivation. I'm going to do this for God because this is what I'm living my life for. And everyone else was living for whatever they wanted to.
Right.
Like the Pharaoh and
yeah.
And no one was looking to God.
Yeah, and that's the only glimpse. I mean, we just have this tiny little glimpse. I can imagine if we had the details, it just sickened us, as it certainly sickened God. He was grieved in his heart that he even made man, which tells us that must have been a terrible, terrible thing. You know, people say, well, didn't he know? I don't know. I mean, you can know, or can man become even worse than he anticipated because of free will? You know, you say, well, I don't know about that. He knows everything. And you know, I remember Carl and I had a few discussions over that, because you have a perfect God who knows everything, but you also have a God who made perfect free will. So if our perfect free will is free will enough, then what would that mean? Could God know the outcome? You say, well, yeah, I think he could. Well, like I say, you're either limiting God's ability to make a free will being, or you're limiting his knowledge. I don't know which one's better. I just leave it alone. I don't know. We may find out on the judgment day. God didn't know which way Adam was going to go. He had two plans. One if he did, one if he didn't. Other people say, no, I know he had one plan. Well, yeah, but wasn't the heavens and the earth perfectly fitted for him to stay there forever? So, I don't know. Well, let's leave it alone here. I just think sometimes we are so smart that we only look at one side, when the possibility is that the other side could equally be. He is such a creative genius that he made a being, and even he couldn't see which way they would go. And that may have been. I don't know. Okay, Ken?
I mean, God seems to indicate that it was a total surprise that people would get rid of their unborn children. I mean, that's somewhere in the Old Testament. I don't know.
Yes, never came into my mind that you guys would do such a thing.
Yeah. And then earlier we were talking about, you know, going to a movie, and, you know, there's Philippians 4:8, where you're supposed to have good things in your mind all the time. You can hardly see any movie these days or television or anything without violating what you're supposed to be thinking.
Yeah, and it's a tough compromise people make sometimes. How much you're going to swallow of that in order to be entertained. Kelly?
We're on, we're getting a little far field. I just want to pick up on Rob's point. You know, if we are truly going to be able to love and serve our brethren and others, love our enemies, you know, we've got to keep those things out of our mind. Because if you watch violence, if you watch even people who are acting in a very ungodly way, they may not even be using foul language, they may not even have sexual immorality, but they are acting in a very, hatred and malice, and those things aren't good.
Right.
They should not be filling our mind. Now, the Bible talks about hatred, malice, and envy. It shows examples of this, but it's always painted as an ungodly, and it shows the consequences and the end of those things.
Right.
When we watch movies, as to Rob's point, do we want to, oh, we like that. What's that saying about our hearts, about what we're choosing to ingest
right
into our souls, you know?
Yeah, and they've done studies. I mean, the emotional empathy in the movie, you're feeling. And when that movie starts with this poor guy getting beat up, and the rest of the movie he's getting even with him, we're kind of cheering him on. And it's a mindset we don't need. But that's what they set up back at those times. Okay, so God cleanses the earth, and then immediately, what happens at the Tower of Babel? Is there something wrong at the Tower of Babel? I don't know what it is. I looked through it today, and I was about to say, well, I think it was this, because God did say you're supposed to fill the earth, but they would have got around to it eventually. I don't know that them saying we're going to build a tower so we don't have to go through all the earth. But there was an attitude there. There was something there that God could see, where he said, this is what they're going to do, so we're not going to let this go like this again. So what does he do? Changes their languages. And then, just to make sure, he tosses them all over the earth. So now we can't talk to each other, and we can't get to each other. So now we got a perfect scenario, which I'll talk about in just a second. George?
Well, I understand the context of that part of the Old Testament, that they were trying to set themselves up as God. And that's why God didn't want to destroy it. Like, look at this, what we're going to do. And we're going to be the greatest thing around.
Right. Yeah, there was definitely some arrogance there. So, Okay, I'm going to have to curtail some of these comments. We're not going to get anywhere. Go ahead, Ken. I'm sorry. Just, right. If it doesn't have to be said, no, it has to be said.
Yeah, yeah.
That's all right. If we don't get anywhere, that's okay.
Genesis 11:6, God was saying, now nothing will be restrained from them which they have imagined to do. And, I mean, you can see all the terrible stuff on the Internet where the language is not, you know, you can translate anything you want. People get some pretty bad stuff going on.
Right.
So we're kind of circumventing the Tower of Babel with the Internet.
Yeah, well, we're certainly trying, and we may end up in the same situation. Anyway, well, the point that I wanted to make is that by separating them into nations, God could keep his promise. You remember his promise he made to Noah? I'll never do something again. Never destroy the whole earth. But where's man heading here at the Tower of Babel? Right back to the same situation. So what does God do? He separates them all out. Now he's got recourse. If this nation becomes bad, what does he do?
Deal with that nation.
He just sends in another nation. Now he uses one nation to punish another nation, to punish another nation, and he doesn't have to do what he did. That doesn't mean he can't, because what happened to Sodom and Gomorrah? You see, it's still there. And, you know, I've been reading a lot about Pompeii here lately, and the wickedness of Pompeii and how they died. It was a terrible thing, and could that have been a judgment from God? See, it certainly could have been. Okay, so at that point, we have the nations beginning, and God makes these nations, and then the next thing we read, and I just want to hit on this briefly, is Romans chapter 1. Because what happened to all these nations as soon as God scattered them? God gave them up because they'd already gone after strange flesh, and they'd already started worshiping idols. Well, how do I know that? Because when God is speaking to Israel through Joshua. He says, are you going to serve the gods that your father served beyond the river? Well, where'd those gods come from? That's why God pulled Abraham out of there, right? Idolatry was already there. Idolatry was already in Egypt. And even at this point, per what happened to Noah with Canaan and God's curse of Canaan, what are the sexual practices already? I mean, did Sodom and Gomorrah start just after Abraham was called? No, they were well into it. As a matter of fact, he destroyed them right in the middle, about maybe 20 years after he called him. So most of the things that you read in Romans chapter 1 were already occurring. Now, I've studied this before, and we'll talk about it at the time. I think this is a pattern. I think that Romans chapter 1 is a pattern that has happened again and again and again and again. It happened to here, but it also happened to Israel, and it's happened to many a church. Where they know God, they don't glorify him as God, and what does God do? What did Jesus save them to do, that church at Ephesus? I'm going to give you out. I'm going to pull your candlestick. So I think Romans chapter 1 is not a single isolated event. I think it is something that has happened, it happens all the time. As a matter of fact, every nation that had godliness at some point ultimately goes right back into what we're reading about. You say, well, America hasn't. Well, we don't have foreign gods, but is evolution pretty well covering all of it as far as giving God up? George and then Kelly.
Well, it's interesting that you're talking about repeating of things. At Noah and his sons were all saved because of their righteousness, and now very soon, they are all in this condition of wrong, and that's a good example to us today, because if you look at history, for instance, you see the cycles you're talking about. For instance, there was a period of time when the popes were homosexuals and various things that you can find out from history, but also, if we look at the church in the lifetime of some of us, you can see where, okay, the father and mother were very righteous. And there were several like this in the church. And then the next generation, well, things are getting worse. And then about the third generation, the church goes away as being any concept even close to being called
right.
A church anymore.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just a cycle. Looks like the cycle of the judges. Just And then it went to the cycle of the kings, and then now it's cycle of the churches. Kel?
I was just pointing out from Colossians chapter 3, where he talks about, you know, put to death your members which are upon the earth. He talks about fornication, you know, lust. Then he talks about covetousness. We absolutely live in a nation of idols.
Sure.
We idolize materialism.
That's true.
We idolize prestige. We idolize sports figures. We have lots of idols.
Right.
They're just not carved out of wood.
Yeah.
They come in the form of iPhones and football players and all kinds of things.
Yes, they do. And video games, right? Video games, guys.
Wow.
You guys are worshiping them. You stay up all night. All right, never mind. So God calls Abraham, and now we have a new nation. And what's the purpose of this nation? This is a nation that doesn't have pre-appointed. Well, I guess it does, but it did God intended for this nation to fall? Remember, at the time Isaiah, God said, if he hadn't given us a seed, who would we be like right now? We'd be like Sodom and Gomorrah. We deserve what Sodom and Gomorrah got. The only reason we're not getting it is because God made a promise to Abraham. And so don't think, oh, we're children of Abraham. God, we're the greatest nation on earth. Remember what he said? Those people who are in the graves and they're saying, I'm holier than you and stay away from me. And God says, you're just like smoke in my nostrils. It just, God doesn't like that. You ever get in a fire and get that smoke off your nostrils, you'll know what that's talking about. It's a terrible thing. So God chooses Abraham. And now Abraham is going to also become, as you see that one verse there, Romans 4, right toward the middle of the page, it says, I have made you a father of many nations in the presence of him who believed, God who gives life to the dead and calls those things which do not exist as though they did. So now we have the real purpose of nations. There's two purposes for nations. One, he gave them their pre-appointed bounds and the habitation, the limits of their habitations so that they would what? Grope after God. So God's intent for all nations is to create a nation. Did he do a pretty good job with America? Have many people groped after God in this country? You know, and you think back in the when Rome fell, and if there were any Christians in, and there, I'm sure there were, they were thinking, well, it must be time for the second coming. There's nobody left. And yet, what does God do? He reworks everything, and now here we are 1,500 years later, and I'm kind of convinced that God may have gotten more Christians out of America than he had the people in the first century. I think that we have had a lot of good things come from here and all over the world, and it's just amazing because who could have thought that God would do that back when Rome fell and everything just fell into chaos? So we need to be careful because we seem to think, well, this is probably it because what can God do now? Well, he can recycle everything then in 1,000 years, maybe create something that's even more beneficial to the bringing in of souls. So it's just fascinating how all of this comes together. So now God gives Abraham a lesson. Two lessons, actually, which is found. And these two are critical to our understanding of what nations are for and why the prophets are revealing these things. So first of all, God explains in Genesis 15, toward the middle, actually middle toward the bottom, it says, I'm just going to read the bold part. Your descendants will be strangers in a land that is not theirs and will serve them and they will afflict them 400 years. So God leaves Israel in Egypt for 400 years. Why? Well, there's two reasons. Number one, do they have to become a nation? They're not. When they went in, there's only 70 of them. So they need a place to form. Secondly, where's God going to put them? What about the land? Why can't he put them in the land? Well, look at verse 16. I can't take it away from the Amorites yet. They still deserve it. They haven't become wicked enough for me to remove them from it. So we're waiting. God's waiting, watching, planning all these nations. He sees them just like individuals. He's working with them. He's making decisions. He's watching their wickedness. And then at the right time, now one more plug, and then we'll start making some applications. And that's in Genesis 18. God says, shall I hide from Abraham what I'm doing? Abraham shall surely become a great and mighty nation. I want him to understand. And through him, all of us. I want you to understand this. In verse 20, because the outcry against Sodom and Gomorrah is great, and because their sin is very grave, I will go down now and see whether they have done altogether according to the outcry. In other words, is God very careful before he pushes this button? He says, I'm going down. I'm going to make some assessments. Now, again, this isn't the way I look at God. I figure he knows everything. He doesn't have to come down. He already knows everything's going on. But in order for us to understand just how critical this is, God says, I've actually, and we see this several times. You remember when, I think it's in Daniel, toward the end there, where we have Gabriel and Michael, and they're actually involved in the nations, holding things back and keeping things from happening and fighting against things. So there's a lot more going on than we really understand. God's actually involved in these things in a lot of ways that we don't understand, because sometimes, like Jesus said, you know, if I wanted to right now, what could I do? I can get all these angels down here. You think he's never done it before? Remember Elisha? Remember when Elisha was the guy with Elisha was afraid? God says, open his eyes, and what does he see? All these fiery chariots and all these soldiers. And you say, well, God couldn't do anything. Well, what'd that angel do in Hezekiah's day? One angel.
One angel. 185,000
soldiers are dead. Who did it? Well, neither God or that angel, or both. But it wasn't by human hands. Can that happen in any battle then? God wants it to go this way or wants it to go this way? So, like I say, we just don't know. But this is fascinating, because Abraham's a great nation, and now we need to kind of comprehend this. And the rest of the Old Testament is a development of these plans and an explanation of these plans. And that's why I put this last verse, or this next verse, which is, Surely the Lord God does nothing unless he reveals his secret to his servants, the prophets. In other words, everything we know about how God deals with things, where do we find it? In his prophets. Because who wrote the Old Testament? The prophets. Okay, there's nothing else but prophets in the Old Testament. And they wrote it. And so if we will study, and this is another benefit, that's why at the very bottom there I have, these things were written for our learning, that we through patience and comfort of the scriptures might have hope. We can have a very clear picture of what's going on in the world. Now, we're not going to be able to say, well, God's doing this and God's doing this. But do we know what God's doing right now? He's working out his plan. And as we watch these nations and we watch them become more and more wicked, you see the Western civilization just leaving behind any vestiges of spirituality and any vestiges of morality. And what's coming? Something's coming. And here's Russia, here's China. Could God pick either one of them? Yeah, he could use either one of them. He said, well, he wouldn't do that. They're more wicked than we are. Well, what did Habakkuk say? You can't use them. They're more wicked than we are. God says, just write the vision plainly, Habakkuk, so people can read it even when they're running, because it's coming, and I can't explain it to you because you're not prepared. Kelly?
To a certain extent, that's a warning for us, you know, because to whom much is given, much is required. And as, you know, Jesus warned in Matthew chapter 10, when he was telling them about the persecutions they were going to suffer, he says, and because lawlessness will abound, the love of many will grow cold, but he who endures to the end will be saved.
Right.
So as our nation becomes more ungodly, our love needs to increase and not grow cold, because he who endures to the end will be saved.
Right. And it's a discouraging time for the churches of Christ. I don't know if you've noticed that or not, but many of them are getting smaller and smaller, and we're getting more and more discouraged. And so Kelly's point is really good, because there are some people who need to be encouraged. And if our love can't maintain under these difficult trials, then we become of little value to the Lord, because he needs us. We can't afford to get discouraged. We can't afford to lose our faith. It's been a whole lot worse than this. During the days of Noah, you think that was pretty rough? One family in the whole earth, and everybody else is incredibly wicked. We don't have it that bad yet, although it is discouraging, because you try to bring the Lord up to people, and they see what you're doing, and they checkmate you every time. You just can't seem to quite get there, because they don't want to hear it. Virgil?
Yeah, I agree with what you're saying. I think it's a good class that we're having. I think that those of us that are old enough can look back at some of the history that we have seen, and especially the Second World War and some things that has come in. Every nation that I'm aware of, anyway, that fell during the conflicts, especially the Second World War, were nations that their moral guideposts had crumbled. And they were just, they were ungodly nations. There's only one that in that whole area there that had some semblance of morality. It had happened to be at that particular time, if we look back at it, was Britain. Now, Britain survived. But who did they survive by? They helped the United States. France was a queen of the European theater for years. But it was said of France, it wasn't the matter that France fell. The problem was she was not fit to live.
Right.
And the moral structure of these countries that they were looking at are gone. And I think that these lessons we're talking about right now is something that we need to pay attention to for our own nation and the moral structure of our nation. It is sliding. It is sliding bad.
Right.
Look at all the abortion thing for just one thing, and all of that kind of stuff. It goes on and on and on and does not stop. And eventually, if it doesn't change, then this country will be brought to its knees.
Right.
We know that from past history of the way it is.
So God knows what he's doing, I guess, is the conclusion that I'd like to make on this. And that's unfortunately our last point, is that he told Nebuchadnezzar, I've given you this dream, so you know what?
God rules and the king is a man. And to whomever he chooses.
Exactly. And what did Daniel warn Nebuchadnezzar? Here's what you better do. Break off your sins, become more humble. One day, this is the great Babylon that I built. The next day, he's an animal. He learns his lesson, but what about his son? And we'll talk about this next week, but Daniel says to him, you knew what happened to your father. You knew these things. You didn't. Now here you are taking the vessels out of the temple, praising the gods of gold. God has numbered your kingdom, he's divided it, and he has put you in the balance, and you're wanting. So, and that's the day that the Medo-Persian Empire took over. And then I make the point, and we'll cover this next week, but then I make the point, God actually gives the name to the guy who's going to do that and what he's going to do. So that's how involved God is in the material world. And I doubt that it's any different today, because God still wants what? I mean, this whole purpose was what?
Souls.
To save as many souls and keep as many souls as possible from perishing. You think that's different now? God doesn't care about that now, that his son's come? No, he's just as interested in it today, and he's working the nations. And so don't be surprised if we don't hit some terrible cataclysm here at some point to bring everybody back to their knees so that maybe we can save this nation, because that's what's happened in the past. All right, we'll go ahead and stop there, and we'll pick up next week. What I'll do is I'll pull the page 4 off of this, and then I think we can finish it up in one more, maybe two more, because what I want to do now is go back through and talk about all the different prophets and what they've taught us. Because I think it's very important for us, since God wanted us to know these things. He told Nebuchadnezzar, I'm going to do this so the living will know. Not just you, the living will know. I rule in the kingdoms of men, and I give it to whoever I want. All right, thanks.